Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Spokespeople Podcast. I'm your host, Dave, with our co-host.
Also Dave.
There you have it, guys. Two Daves, no waiting. All right, I'm accommodating Dave on that.
There you right? go. Good job.
So buddy. We had a pre-podcast conversation about the introduction. I thought it was funny. Apparently, Dave didn't find it funny.
And I didn't say
there's an audience segment that we don't want to discriminate against, and so therefore we decided that we would go with the 2 days no waiting.
2 days no waiting.
2 days no waiting. I like it.
Somehow that sounds even worse.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's true.
It sounds like we're working together in a weird way. And Dave, we don't work together. I work for you, and you sit in your office.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Even when you say you work for me, you really don't really work
for me. It's pretty much, I'm just doing stuff and like,
okay. I'm listening to you drop a lot of F-bombs while you're, fixing things.
Yeah, it's amazing how people come in here and I never know they're here. Like, we need a louder bell or something like that.
So I've got Ken on that.
You know how you go into a Casey's or a Quick Trip and it goes, bing bong?
Yeah.
We totally need the bing bong.
We need the bing bong.
There we go.
Absolutely need the bing bong.
Yeah.
I got Ken working on that.
And, Ken's going to get us a bing bong?
He's looking for a bing bong. And
nice.
It is funny because we had the last bing bong go bad. And so in case you're listening, you're like, what the heck are these guys talking about? So as we've told other people, if this is your first time joining us, hit the follow. But we are a podcast about all things cycling that's actually in a bike shop.
In an actual bike shop.
In an actual bike shop. And so occasionally you're going to hear wrenches and tools being used, and you might hear the music going because we usually
You'll also hear F-bombs being
and
used.
Occasionally, we try to beep those out when you do hear them, but it just happens. It's just, angry boys at work.
Yeah.
But we had a bing bong, so we knew when people were coming in, and I have an office back there where I do all the work that I do for the shop, and I get to listen to Dave rant and rave sometimes, and sometimes he says things that are hilarious. So it's an enjoyable environment because it's just a bunch of guys working on bikes, talking about bikes, drinking coffee, listening to good music, and just chilling and living
that's,
large.
That's always been for me the great part about working in a shop is to a certain extent, nothing's really out of bounds.
No, it really isn't. I mean,
as far as topics of conversation.
Yeah, it's a healthy, and we have, it's not like we don't have disagreements. You and I have disagreements, but there's always healthy respect, which I really appreciate because we don't get that very often in a lot of places,
Yeah, that's actually true. I will say that too. And from the heart, I mean that because I've worked a lot of places and been fired from most of them,
I don't know how to respond to that because I know it's brutally honest, and I think we just move on to the next topic.
Yeah, we can move on.
All
it's
right,
fine.
Let's do
but
that.
Yeah, I'm glad we're getting a bing bong.
Yeah, we got to get a bing bong. That's a big one. So this one's a little bit different type of podcast because we normally have a guest on.
Yeah, we don't have any guests.
But
today.
As I was sitting there with True, who is our sound editor, sound production guy, who doesn't ever speak very often, but
I think he prefers the label. There's an DJ Mixmaster
open microphone this time, so True could easily jump. He's shaking his head. No. He's like, no, I'm not doing that. He's got a voice made for radio. It's like a canary. It's beautiful.
I love canaries.
When he sings, oh my God, it's amazing. Mm. It's like Bach reborn. But we talked about a couple different things, and the thing we wanted to do on this episode was just kind of talk between Dave and I and kind of give you a little bit more familiarity with who we are, what we do, why we do what we do. And so I'm going to start off and I'm going to throw it right at Dave and I'm going to say, Dave, I'm going to ask you the traditional question that we ask every guest that comes on the show.
Oh, here we go.
How did you get into cycling?
Huh? I think I'm not sure when I got my first bike. I'll tell you this. So my older brother, Craig, my dad was in the Air Force. First of all, let me back that up. And he was in the Air Force for 26 years. So I grew up on Air Force bases. All across the country, and sometime in the 70s, I think I was 4 or 5, and my brother was a year and a half older than me. And so my dad re-enlisted, and he got a bonus. And so he asked us, the two boys, do you want a present? And my brother said, yeah, I want a bike. So he got a bike. And me, I always wanted to be a cowboy because I'm 4 years old. And so I got a freaking really nice cap gun set with real leather holsters and a hat, you know what I mean? And so there's pictures of me with this, and I'm happy. I'm like, this might have been the happiest day of my life. I swear to God, next to my marriage. I'm serious. And because I'm super happy. But anyway, there's a Super 8 film of my brother. This is in Guam. My dad re-upped while he was in Guam, which is also where Ken was stationed there too, Anderson Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. Really, really interesting air base. So anyway, there's a Super 8 film on my brother, like getting on this bike and kind of going down the street, which had a little bit of a slope to it, and running like and right away into a palm tree, you know? And this is, it's like a little 20-minute reel, but we've all seen it. And in my mind right now, I'm going through that exact thing, you know? So that was my brother. And like my older brother, he was like my idol and like my best friend. And we did everything together, you know, until he was old enough to like ditch me for older friends, you know?
Right.
And that's how
cars
it goes.
And girls.
Yeah, you know, just older guys, you know, because he was two grades ahead.
Right.
And anyway, so I think I got my first bike in Michigan. We lived in Michigan at the time. This is probably like 74-ish, 70, like about 1974. I would have been nine. And the airbase was located outside of a very small town, Oscoda, Michigan, right on the shores of Lake Huron. Just beautiful water up there. Just the most beautiful country. Salmon running up the stream and you just name it. Anything you want to do as an outdoorsman, right there.
Right.
So beautiful. Anyway, there wasn't much of a downtown. There was an Ace Hardware. There was a post office and a Dairy Queen, which was only open for like 3 months of the year because otherwise it was cold.
Right.
So what they did...
The old outdoor walk-up service type Dairy Queens.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was right next to the pier, which was right next to the shore. And so anywho, they didn't have a lot of big stores. There was a Ben Franklin. Nobody knows what that is.
I do,
but
yeah,
Ben Franklin. I love Ben Franklin. It was great. Ben Franklin was the greatest. And so, and the Ace Hardware. But they did have outlet stores for both Sears and Montgomery Ward's, which was a thing.
Yep.
And so we ordered stuff from both. And what you did was you'd go there. It's a small office, probably twice as big as this room, and that's it. And the rest of it was a warehouse.
Right.
And they would, you'd go out there and you'd flip through catalogs, literally. No computers, no nothing, no picture, just a catalog. And you would flip through it and find what you wanted, and you'd write it down on a form with all the numbers and stuff, and you'd pay for it, and then you'd wait for it to come in. And like, that was like the greatest thing, you know? So we ordered like a dishwasher, a lawnmower, and my bicycle. And it was a orange and white bicycle. And it had like ape hanger handlebars and a banana seat.
Yeah.
And I think it had a 20-inch wheel on the back and maybe an 18 on the front. It was kind of like that dragster style. It
sure.
was kind of cool. And man, I loved that bike like you have no idea.
Don't you wish you still had that bike?
I mean, honestly, that's my rosebud.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and there were like thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of bikes like these, like sold through catalogs through Sears and Montgomery Ward's and JCPenney, you name it. Some of them even had their own brands. You know,
right.
they'd usually be made by like Ross Bicycle Company, just some low-end thing that somebody that TIG welded them or whatever in a frame in Indiana somewhere, did that kind of thing. But I love this bike, and anyway, we did all kinds of stuff. We'd make our own trails in the woods and all this kind of stuff.
All bikes at that time were mountain bikes.
We
took everything off-road. Didn't matter.
I swear that we invented BMX. I swear. There were no BMX bikes at the time.
I remember the time.
In 1974 in Michigan, like some guy brought, they had a bike that resembled a motorcycle. I think Yamaha made it. And it looked like a motorcycle, like the way they, like a motocross bike with the kind of a stupid bench seat, not like the ones they have today, but it was like a bench seat almost, you know, and then like the big wide handlebars with the waffle grips and stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it even had shocks. And some kid, his dad was an officer. We always hated the officer's kids because they always had money. You know, they had more money and they were smart, so they only had like one or two kids instead of five. You know,
right.
like our enlisted parents, like let's have more kids. You know,
yeah, I was the child of Irish rabbits.
Yeah, same. So you know, this guy had one, man. But we would go out in the forest with shovels and rakes, and we would make our own little courses, like downhill, uphill. We would dig holes. We'd make jumps. We even made like a mud pit one time. We like hooked together like four or five hoses from the neighborhood and dragged it around to this little section of woods in front of the house. We made a mud pit, and our parents, you know, your parents would like come out like you're doing some crazy shit like this, and they'd ask you what you were doing, but they wouldn't yell at you for it.
No.
You know what I mean? I mean, I used to do this shit.
Don't get hurt. That's what my mother would always say. Just don't get hurt.
My mom would come out, and I'd be way up in a high tree because I was a little monkey. I weighed nothing, and I could climb the highest tree, and I did. My mom would come out, and she'd cry. But anyway, so we did all that crap. So that's what we did. That was our life. Bikes and baseball and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's how we started with bikes.
And now you're doing all kinds of riding. Like, you do gravel, and you do cyclocross.
Yeah.
And you do mountain.
It's cyclocross season, yeah. I didn't do as much mountain this year, just because that's just kind of the way it worked out.
Okay.
I did some of the races.
But you did a lot of crit this year, too, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot. There's only four races anymore. I mean, you have to understand, I mean, to me, a lot is like two races in a week.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Or two races on a weekend.
Okay.
You know, but it's just not that way anymore.
Right.
Maybe it'll come back. We're trying to get it back, but we'll see. But yeah, did the local crit series, did pretty well. I ended up finishing third in the series overall. And the two guys that beat me, one is half my age and the other one is 20 years younger. So I don't feel too awful bad.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So
well, we'll get into that a little bit because I want to figure out how you did that. But I want to let everyone know that, you know, Dave works here as a mechanic, but he also helps customers out on the floor, and he's incredibly knowledgeable about the products that are out there. But one of the things we wanted to talk about was basically, or was basic bike mechanics, you know, maintenance, you know, taking care of your bike, you know,
that's the first thing,
take care of your ride. So what I wanted to ask is, cause you do a lot of riding and you do a lot of different types of riding. Uh-huh. You know, you look at the simplest things on the bike are tires, chains
and tires, man. Those are the two things you got to check every single time you ride. I'm pretty particular about chains and tires. So I literally clean my chain before I ride my bike every single time.
Okay. And how do you do that?
So I do it two ways. One is I use a solvent, WD-40, and I make it foamy when it comes out of the little nozzle, and I foam it around, and I have my bike in a stand, first of all. You have to have a bike stand. Otherwise, you can't do much.
Right.
Leaning up against a garage is not going to work. So I have the bike in the stand, and I get the nozzle, and I shake the can up, and it's all foamy when it comes out. So you get that foamy WD-40 in your back pedal until you've gone around the entire chain like a couple times. So I back pedal like about eight times. And then what I do is, if I have time, I get my air nozzle, and I blow that out, and then I use my microfiber towels, and then I actually reapply my chain lube and wipe that down. So that is like the grade A process. And like the grade B process is just a quick wipe and let's with a microfiber towel, and then let's go. But you got to check your chain and your tires every single time. Otherwise, you're just asking for trouble.
So how many miles can you get on a chain and a rear cassette before you're probably looking at replacing?
Okay, so if you do what I do, you're gonna almost double it. But typically what they tell you is about 3,000 miles.
Okay.
Okay, so that's about, for an average person, that's about a year or maybe longer, you know. But for me, it's about a season. And when I mean a season is like a road season or a cyclocross season. And so what I'll usually do is get a new chain at the beginning of each season.
Okay, so you replace the chain at the beginning of each season?
Yeah, I do.
Chains do stretch.
Yeah, so what happens is... So people talk about chain stretch, and it's a misnomer, because when you talk about stretch, you're talking about the distance between the two pins.
Right.
Okay? And that is actually set by the links, because they're pressed in there, and you are not going to stretch that with anything short of industrial machinery.
Okay.
What actually happens is there are two rollers that revolve around that pin, okay? And what happens is the inside of those rollers that are around that pin, okay, that inside circumference wears and becomes bigger. And so when the two rollers on opposite pins are opposed to each other, they are farther apart, okay?
Okay.
And so that's how they measure the chain stretch, quote, is you have a device and you press it in there, and basically it's measuring how far apart those rollers have moved or worn. And that's your indication. So when we talk about chain stretch, we're talking about the rollers on the pins, not the distance between the pins, because you're not going to change that.
Okay.
Yeah. So all right. That's how that's done.
That's good information. I didn't know the details of that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just it is how people describe it. So I understand what people are saying. It's not. I'm not going to sit there and correct people like but that's the science, you know.
Yeah, I don't think the bader is actually going to be logical response.
So if you have a pretty good chain maintenance regimen, like I do, you're going to get more mileage out of your chain. And also, you're going to reduce the wear on your cassettes and your chain rings. So they're designed as a system. They wear together. The chains, the chain rings, and the cassettes all wear in together. And so if you get to the chain and keep it clean and maybe change the chain out before it, quote, stretches too much, then you can keep the same cassette and chain rings and not have to change those. So you can probably run two or three chains before you have to change your cassettes and your chain rings.
What signs or symptoms of your bike being ill does that, you know, having the chain stretch and the cassette being worn out?
In extreme wear cases, the chain can actually slip on the chain rings. But what you'll typically have is misshifting. And it doesn't shift very well.
Okay,
that's the big clue with these multi-gear systems.
So that's something that you do though for every day you go riding, and you train, so you ride as much as possible
every day, every time. You know, so I have little commuter bikes that I go to the coffee shop or I go to Hy-Vee. You know what I mean? And no, I don't do it for those. But like for a real training ride, like an hour, 2 hours, absolutely.
Okay.
It takes 3 or 5 minutes what I'm doing, because I do that, boom, boom, and then I get my tires up to the pressure I want, and boom, boom, then I'm off.
So now, is you follow that regimen obviously before you race as well, but are there other things that you do to prep the bike prior to racing?
Well, you know, racing, basically, you have your bike in the stand and you just make sure everything is as tip-top as can be. The big thing about races is I'm more particular about whether or not the brakes are rubbing, like the discs rubbing on the pads, or in the case of, caliper brakes, if the brake pads are rubbing on the rim, that kind of thing. You're going to look at your tires a little bit more. You're going to see if, is there a piece of glass in there? Is there a hole? Are they holding there? The nice thing about like doing maintenance all the time is you know where your bike is at, from the last time you rode it to now. You know, if you notice a change, then,
So do you do like when you get done with a long training ride?
No. So when I'm done, I'm done. Okay. Cause then I take care of me. I take care of my body. I hydrate, I fuel, I take my showers and things like that. So, yeah, when I'm done with a ride, bike goes up on the hook or in the stand. I hook it up under the seat or, put it in the stand. And then I take care of me. So take care of the human machine.
And so annually, what do you do with your bikes? Now, this is, and people have to remember that we're talking about somebody who not only rides and competes, but you're a mechanic. I mean, you're a bike mechanic.
Yeah, so I usually have built all of my own bikes. If it's a bike that I bought, from the shop, like you guys, which is where I've been buying my bikes for, 10 years probably. When that bike comes in the box, I build it,
Mm-hmm.
But I also assemble the bikes from just a frame, like I did with my new road race bike.
The one I tried to sell.
Yeah. The one you tried to sell. You're like, oh, this is really cool, So, and then I build my own wheels, and I like to select my own components, and do that kind of thing. Because that's kind of an old school thing. Because back in the day, when I started, it was steel frames and Campy and 7-speeds.
Right.
And index shifting was new. Like click, mm-hmm. click, click shifting was new. I raced against so many guys for so many years in the beginning with just friction shifters. And if you don't know what that is,
I do.
Yeah. then you're probably under 30. So,
yeah.
So that's the kind of the way it was. If you wanted a nice bike, you bought a frame, you bought a Grupo, and you had a mechanic in the shop build you wheels. I remember when I started off working at Ole, Chuck was back there making, Chuck would build, Chuck was this old guy mechanic. Just, if you think I'm crotchety, holy crap. I mean, Chuck was just old crotchety guy, but a great guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Chuck would build a wheel set every single day because that's what it was. We'd have racks of rims, the Mavic rims, everything from the racing, the tubular, the clincher, you name it, to just, you know, commuter stuff, touring stuff. We had... Larry and the guys would buy estate sale stuff from old businesses, and those little file drawers, the metal ones.
Yeah,
they had one that tall, and it was all spokes. It was all spokes. I mean, I'm talking thousands of different sizes.
So he's, when he says that tall, he's looking at a wall that's about, that's
got 5-6 feet tall,
5-6 feet tall,
and about 5 feet wide. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, we just every spoke, you know, and in the boxes and all the spokes.
Wow.
You know, we didn't, like here, we have a spoke cutting machine, a fill wood spoke. It cuts the spokes and then it threads them. And that's pretty cool. But we didn't have that because we just had every spoke.
Well, and, you know, in we've also realized that a lot more rims and stuff are being manufactured.
Yeah, it's changed. Yeah. Everything's changed. Yeah. Everything was kind of like in the...
If you wanted it, you had to kind of do some of those things
in
yourself.
The clothing industry, in the automobile industry, they call it bespoke. You know, mm-hmm. like an English term. And it was kind of like that. For your nice high-end stuff, you'd buy a frame. You'd have a wheels. You'd have a Grupo. You'd order it. Usually a Campy if you're racing. Or maybe a Dura-Ace. A mechanic in the shop would build you some wheels. Boom, there you go. That's how it worked.
I still love that bespoke.
It's cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My suits are bespoke.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. Love it. Got to have that. I got a guy. In fact, he's coming to town. I love this guy. Niswani's his name. He's great. So now when you do all these things, the other thing that, you know, is you get out to ride. You said you're checking air pressures too.
Yeah. So, you know, air pressures changed a lot since I started riding.
Mm-hmm.
So tires have changed a ton. So when I started racing and stuff, you would race around a 23 millimeter wide tire was considered a very wide tire.
Mm-hmm.
We were racing on 20s and 19s, and we would routinely pump them up to 120 PSI on the road, you know, racing around on these little skinny tires.
So now when you talk about PSI, you know, mm-hmm. you know, the pressure, the amount in the tire, right?
Yeah.
Pressure per square inch. So you look at that, like on mountain bikes, a lot of mountain bikes will say, you know, 60 PSI, but I know a lot of guys
that's
ride.
That's a max.
Yeah, that's a max. But I know a lot of guys ride around 32, 34.
Oh, geez. I ride it like 17 to 20.
Okay.
But that's a mountain bike tire. It's 2.25 to 2.5 inches, you know, wide. It's got a huge air volume.
So do you, like, so, and it's a little bit different. It gives you a little bit softer ride when you're riding it that way.
Absolutely. So, you know, going back to the thing with the skinny tires and high pressures when I started, and this was like 89, 90, okay, when I started really riding seriously and racing.
Mm-hmm.
And... so nowadays, we've got a completely different tire system. Instead of an inner tube, we've got a tubeless tire like a car with some sealant in there, but no inner tube. And they're wider. The rims are wider. The tires are wider. And so the pressures are lower. I ride around now on 30 millimeter wide tires at 50 PSI. And it's the best of everything. It's a great ride. It's fast. And it doesn't... if I'm in a race, like at a Criterium, I'll pump those up to 70. It just feels a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And the tire doesn't squirm under high G forces or on a corner because you can get them, you know.
Right.
When you go around these like tight hairpins and stuff.
But tire inflation is, you know, there's recommendations by the manufacturers, obviously. But then there's also kind of a personal feel.
Whatever it says on the sidewall of the tire, just don't even look at it, in my opinion. I mean, you got to figure it out for yourself. Yeah.
Because I imagine body weight. It takes into account some of that.
Body weight and terrain are the two things. Because if you're riding on bumpy terrain, you want a bigger tire at a lower pressure. Otherwise, you're just going to be bouncing. Like we used to just literally bounce over stuff, you know, and that's the way it was. We didn't know any better, you know.
Yeah, see, I have to reset my tires because I have them set at my weight being 220.
Well, I know a lot of guys at 220, and the thing is, that's great. I mean, if I could lose 20 pounds, I'd be happier.
Well, it's not 20 pounds, it's 12, but okay.
Okay, well, I mean,
I do math.
I'm a guy, so that's 20 pounds. But yeah, so anyway, tires have changed a lot. Tires and wheel systems have changed a lot. You know, you've gone from, I still build my own. You can still do that. But most of the time you're buying a wheel these days as part of like a wheel system, like a Mavic,
right,
or a Giant wheel. You know, the KDX wheels actually are very good wheels. They're actually kind of hard to get. I don't know if you've tried as a Giant dealer to ever order these KDX wheels, but
like they go fast.
They're back ordered.
Because they're first of all, the quality is outstanding.
They're Tour de France level wheels. They actually race on them. They're not in any way subpar. They're grade A plus wheels, the KDX wheels.
And they're hard to get.
They are.
But when we get them, a lot of times we can special order things.
But I would love to get them, but there's no discount. There's no grassroots on that.
They never stay in the shop more than 2 or 3 days. Oh, if somebody finds out we got a pair in, it's gone.
Well, so they're very good. So things have changed a lot with wheels. But back to your thing about what do I do else on the main. So at the end of the year, I'll do like kind of a disassembly of the bike. You know, I'll take the cranks out. I want to check those bearings. Usually for a bottom bracket, you can probably, you know, get a season or two out of them at least. If it's cyclocross and it's muddy and you've been power washing it, you might as well just get new bearings bottom bracket bearings.
So the average person who can't, you know, fix those bikes, you know, those are services that they do. Are those services they want to take into the bike shop and
absolutely,
say, hey, guys.
Yeah, man, just go in there because, you know, get a tune-up. Get an annual tune-up.
Yeah.
It's $100 well spent, man.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's your peace of mind. Because then you're having a guy like me who's, you know, got umpteen years of experience, you know, and I don't pretend to know everything. There's a lot of stuff I don't know, but there's other guys in the shop, they do know. There's like a lot of, you know, cross-field knowledge that comes
It's a compilation of minds.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, like Drake, our suspension guy. I mean, I don't know a tenth of what this guy knows about suspensions and things like that.
Drake is pretty solid on
suspensions. I mean, so he knows how to fix all that, and Todd over here knows a lot about this stuff too, you know, and Jamie, our product manager, the guy knows ABC.
Yeah, he does.
About and XYZ about all the stuff, you know. And
he's a walking encyclopedia.
I literally just had a discussion with him about my bike that I bought here 6 years ago and what equipment's on it, and he's telling me, and he knows, and I'm like, will this work with that? And he's like, no. I'm like, okay. And that's the kind of expertise you have to have these days because that's how complicated it can be. So that's why you got to go to your shop, man, because they're going to tell you what's going to work and they're going to make it work. So there you go.
So one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, because when we're talking about tires and rims and everything like that, on my Jeep, I get an oil change.
Yeah.
I rotate the tires. Do you do that with bikes?
Oh, yeah. So your rear tire is under a lot more pressure because there's more weight bias on that. So your rear tire, especially on road bikes, it's going to get worn off in the middle of that tire much faster than the front. So what you want to do is literally every couple hundred miles, if you can, rotate that front tire to the back and vice versa.
And do you have to change over the cassette and everything like that too?
No, you just have to take the tire off and reinstall it on the other wheel.
All right, so you're saying rotate the rubber.
Rotate the rubber, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it can be a little bit of a pain. Now, with the new tubeless tire systems, that kind of means that, you know, you're going to have to put new sealant in there.
Right.
So it's up to you. Do you want to do that and get some more mileage out of your tires? Or do you just want to keep going and not have to do the sealant and all that other business?
Now, or if you're bring just it into the shop and have them do it.
Bring it into the shop and have them do it. So, but if you've just got inner tubes in there, well, that's easy.
Sure.
You just take them off. So if you just have inner tubes, that's probably the way to go, you know.
For me,
I have tubular tires, which are glued on, so it's a little bit more of a process. But I only expect to get a season out of those anyway, so I generally don't do it anymore with my tubulars. It's just too much work.
So annually, do a tune-up, have it ready for the next season.
Absolutely.
Every year I tell people, hey, man, during the winter months, bring it in. Get it tuned.
Absolutely,
get it serviced, because there's always, you ever notice, there's always like 1 or 2 days in February where it just gets gorgeous, and you're like, man, my bike's not ready to ride.
Bring it in like, you know, December, January.
Yep.
And then, you know, we'll be able to take our time with it and not rush. And
have it ready for when you get those special days and
then,
right before the season starts.
We'll call you, hey, you need a new chain or you need this or the, you know, and it won't be a surprise and we can order it for you. You know, if we don't have the parts, then we can order for you. And then you're like, oh, it's not going to be like, you know, March 15th and it's going to be a great day and you're like, oh, my shop, my bike's in the shop, you know?
Right, exactly. So you have it ready to rock and roll.
Also, if you have a lot of bikes, then you can just ride a different one. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring the one you love in. Yeah. Get that one tuned up.
And if you don't have a lot of bikes, that's what we're here for. We're here to sell you another one.
Yep. You should always have two. Yeah. I agree.
Two bikes.
You should always, a minimum of two. Think about it.
You're adorable. Have you seen my house? It's insane.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I mean, I've got more than that, but I'm just simply saying, you know, should at least have two.
I between the two of us, my wife and I have 20 bikes.
Okay. And how many are yours?
Probably
18.
No, she actually has quite a few bikes. I have built for her one, two, three. She has four bikes. My wife has four bikes.
Okay.
Yeah. Her favorite bike is this little purple bike I built for her. It's a step-through frame, and it's got a rack on the back, and she goes to fairway on it with these big baskets. It's crazy. She just tootles down. It's got a bell. It's like ding dong. You know, she has a bing bong.
There you go. See, everybody knows you're there.
Yeah.
So we talk about the bike. We talk about what we should be doing to take care of it for daily, you know, pre-race, annually. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about what we do to take care of our body a little bit too.
Oh,
but
yeah.
One of the things that I've heard, because I was talking with Ken just today.
Yeah, he's like, my coach.
Yeah, and he said, you know, after you buy a bike and a helmet, the first thing you should get is a bike fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's so great that we have Carly now, because she's a certified bike trainer and, you know, she's a certified doctor of physical therapy.
Yeah, she's a PhD in physical therapy.
And she has like decades of experience.
Yeah.
And she's a cyclist and a pretty damn good one too. So, like, as far as, you know...
She's a good racer, isn't she?
And she is really good, you know?
Yeah, I've seen her ride, and I've heard a lot about from a lot of people, and I've seen her ride, and I'm like...
Yeah, I've known Carly for a long time, and she's an extremely good racer. You know, some seasons she trains more than others, and she's more race fit, you know, than others. Yeah, so if you want to get a bike fit, you know, we have experts here to do that. So a bike fit is where, you know, we take your bike... And you come into the Bike Fit studio and we put it on like a trainer and Carly has a session with you and she will measure your body and fit your bike to you. And some of the things that we can change very obviously are saddle position, up and down, fore and aft, okay? But we can also change your cleat placement on your shoe because you want your foot to be in a good biomechanical position on that pedal for you. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's less than obvious to people. You know, some people are really kind of in tune with their body and some people just maybe aren't as much.
Right.
So we can do that. She can do that. You get your saddle and your cleat placement, but also then we can figure out where should I have my hands? That's another important thing, you know. Because that's going to determine how the bike handles and how you sit on the bike. So when you're sitting on a bike, a lot of people think, oh, I'm just sitting on the bike. Well, where's the pressure? Where's your body weight going?
Right.
A lot of it actually is going in your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it, you know, down through your pelvis, but also on your hands. You know, if we sit very upright, obviously, we're not having a lot of pressure on our hands. But as we rotate the body forward, the trunk, the torso, and that gets you in more of a power position. You know, you need that for cycling, you know, road power, mountain power. Then you're putting more pressure on your hands. So you want to be in the ideal position for the kind of riding that you're doing.
Right.
And Carly does it all too. So she knows what you need to do. So that's a great asset to have.
I watched her on a mountain bike race.
She's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, she's very good. And she's a great climber because she's, you know, a tiny person, big power, and can really just, you know, for her size, put out some good watts.
Yeah. So I mean, it's pretty common. Anytime you want the human body to perform better, you have to figure out the ergonomics of that individual
Absolutely,
body.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Because cycling is like anything else in life. One size does not fit all.
No.
Like, I'm 6'3". Uh-huh. Okay, and so I ride, but because I have, you know, I'm basically one generation from dragging my knuckles on the ground, I prefer riding an extra large because I feel like I'm not cramped in a large bike frame, and I get less pain across or soreness and stiffness between the two scapulas.
And that's a little bit at odds with today's kind of bike fit, you know, fashion, if you will.
Yeah, I have long legs and long arms and a small body.
Okay, so you. So when I used to sell a lot of bikes, you know, in my other iterations at other shops, you would kind of be able to size people up right away. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of look at them and say, because you don't want to spend all day trying to figure out what size. And a lot of times it's a medium or a large, right? But with road bikes, you know, you can have a 52 or a 54. Mm-hmm. Now, believe it or not, I'm 5'8", and I'm a, kind of like a middle guy, 54. But when I started, I was routinely put on much larger bikes because that was the fashion at the time. I was riding 56s. Well, that's a guy who's 5'10", you know. That's 2 inches taller than me. That's pretty significant. And back then, you'd just size things differently. So today, you know, we're getting more compact frames.
Right.
And things like that. So that's, you know, you buying the next larger frame, some people want that. And you have to respect that because it's their money.
I don't race. I mean, like, I don't race like you do. I ride for different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I ride to clear my head and get away from people.
Yeah. And you want to be comfortable doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
exactly.
If you don't need a more compact frame for example, maneuverability on a mountain bike trail in the woods, mm-hmm. then you know what? Go for comfort.
Yeah. And so my Santa Cruz mountain bike versus the Revolt, which is a gravel bike, you know, they do fit differently. So I was on a large on a gravel. I'm on an extra large on a mountain bike. And it just, I feel more stable. And mm-hmm. I'm not tearing it up like Little Mac does. He's, you know.
The bike has to fit the application.
Right.
Like, of my 20 bikes, you know, or 11 or however many are mine, or 15, only three of those are actually race bikes. I have one race mountain bike, one race cyclocross bike. Actually, I have two. I have an older one. And one race road bike. The rest of them are actually set up for comfort. Mm-hmm. I actually have some track bikes in there, and those are definitely not comfortable.
Right.
But it's a different thing. I mean, I have tall, really tall stems with kind of a short reach and bars that come back and big fat saddles and ding dong, bing bong bells on there.
Right.
So, but that's what I'm doing, man. I'm going down the Keystone. I'm on the Wabash. I'm going to the Hy-Vee. I'm going to the coffee shop. I don't need a race bike for that. That's not even fun.
No, I agree.
Yeah. You gotta be comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break.
Okay.
Let's do our capitalist moment and do a commercial, and then we'll come back and talk about a couple other things.
Right on.
All right, we're going to take a second here to give a shout out to our sponsor, The Bikeway. For a quarter century, The Bikeway has been the premier destination for all things cycling in Omaha and beyond, with a legacy of passion, dedication, and community. Discover the latest and greatest from top brands like Giant, Liv, Transition, Santa Cruz, Scott, Bianchi, Sunday BMX, and DK. We've got the perfect ride to fuel your adventure. More than just a shop, explore our extensive selection of apparel and accessories. And the Bikeway Certified Service Department has you covered, from basic maintenance to suspension work to custom builds and everything in between. And while you're here, treat yourself to a delicious cup of coffee. As a rider-owned and operated establishment, you can trust that we're dedicated to providing the best possible experience for fellow enthusiasts like you. So join us at the Bikeway, where every ride is an adventure. Here's to 25 years of riding together and many, many more. All right, we're back. Once again, I want to thank the Bikeway. If you are an organization out there that is looking to sponsor your organization or anything like that, please feel free to reach out to us at info@thebikeway.com, and we will respond to that. We're here with Dave Randleman and myself, and we were talking about all kinds of things about bikes, and one of the things we were going to get into was mountain bikes, because as we talk about maintenance and things like that, you know, you've got mountain bikes with front and rear suspension. Some have one, some have both, and you know, there's the 50-hour maintenance, and there's a 200-hour maintenance.
Oh, on the shocks themselves?
On the shock systems themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just kind of keep those things maintained. And in the winter months, that's a good time to do it because that takes a little bit longer of a process.
Yeah, it is. So, like, you're talking about the maintenance on your shocks. And so with your modern shock, let's just talk about the front fork, for example. Depending on the type of fork that it is, it'll have... Okay, so it has two legs, okay? on one side will have a spring and the other side will have an air chamber. This is pretty typical. There are some very high end that have shocks and the air chamber and spring on both legs.
Okay.
But it's usually one or the other. And so the spring is going to be fine unless you've done something terrible, like completely bottom out the fork multiple times, or, but even then. But what happens, this oil is in the shock. And if you can imagine like how bumpy that ride is for you, just think about the liquid inside of that fork.
Right.
You know? And so eventually it kind of gets to the end of its useful life, you know?
Right.
I don't know exactly what happens to it, but it gets kind of degraded and basically a little bit runny. It doesn't stick together as much as it used to. And then it also gets a little bit dirty because when you have your shock at the top, there's like what we call a wiper. It's that little rubber thing that mm-hmm. goes around the stanchion. And basically what that does is not only does it keep dirt out of the inside of the shock, but it keeps the oil that's in the shock in the shock. Yeah. And just underneath that seal is a very cool, it's kind of ingenious. It's a sponge. And the sponge is filled with all the oil that splashes around. And so as the upper part, which we call the stanchion, the really smooth part that goes in and out, as it is being depressed into the shock, it's getting an oil bath. And then that wiper is literally wiping it off. So that's, everyone wonders like, how does this not, like, how is it still going, you know? And it's a real simple engineering solution. But, of course, the rubber is going to wear out, and the oil does kind of degrade over time.
Sure.
So you're going to change both of those out.
It's very particular oil, too.
Yeah, it's fork oil made for that purpose, usually by Fox or whoever, right. You know, has their specific.
But I've seen, like, for example, on hydraulics for brakes. I've mm-hmm. seen people bring their bikes in. They're like, yeah, man, my brakes aren't working. And they're using the completely wrong type of hydraulic fluid.
Well, there's two types, and we can go into that a little bit later. But Shimano basically uses mineral oil, mm-hmm. and SRAM uses basically what is DOT-5 transmission fluid. Okay. And you can't mix those at all.
Okay.
And so there are benefits to either one. But that's a like kind of a little bit of a separate issue, and we'll go into that. You could literally do a whole show on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure people. But you want to,
you
want to,
you know, if you've been riding insomnia. Your mountain bike for like 2-3 years, you probably want to do that. Or, you know, they say you're supposed to do this at like 100 and 500 or whatever.
But there's a 50-hour maintenance and a 200-hour maintenance.
Okay.
So every 50, and then once you get your 200, you do your grand 200. So the fourth one is a 200. So
yeah, see, these are questions I would always ask of Drake, you know, because our suspension go-to guy, suspension and brake go-to.
And I've been spending some time with Drake. He's actually been teaching me.
Oh, really?
I just kind of find the...
Because he has a real job too, right?
He does, yeah. No, yeah. He graduated from college and he got a real job.
Construction management, yep,
and
right?
He went out and got married.
That's right. You know, I was...
And they bought a dog, so, you know...
Well, of course they did.
You got a test run before you have kids, just in case you kill the dog. You know, you can't do that with kids.
No.
You can, but you know you go to prison for it.
But same. You have to pick up their poop.
Yeah. Either way.
Yeah.
For the first couple of years, right. You're doing the same thing with kids.
But,
so
if you don't carry your kids poop around in a plastic bag. That's true. You don't do that.
No.
For the dog, yes. For the kid, no.
No, and I've seen kids on leashes too these days. So.
Oh my God.
You know what I'm talking about?
So
you know what I'm talking about, right?
One of these kids in Germany. Her grandma used to like tie a string to her because she would wander off. She was old school. The grandma was so old school. My wife's naturally left-handed, and her grandmother, her German grandma, told her that's evil. Swear to God,
yeah,
true story.
She's old school.
Yeah very, she's, very she's old school. School. Oh, yeah. She comes from the eastern part, man.
Oh, yeah. So let's get into, so we got our bike ship shape, right? Now we're going to get, you've been training, and you got some races coming up. You did the crit, and you were training through the crits, and we've got... some cyclocross races coming on.
Cyclocross season is in full swing, yeah.
We just had Trail Fest last week.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, a huge event. And we're hoping to get the guys from Thor on to come talk to us about that. They've got a bunch of other things that they're doing and just some really cool stuff that they're doing with Thor.
Yeah, I couldn't make that because I'm going to a different race. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So great event. It is every year. Platte River State Park, they do it every year. We'll have those guys come in. We'll talk some more about that. But
it's great.
you know, they had the last NOS race there with James Crist, who we had on. I think it was episode 6 or 7. Yeah, I think it was 6.
Yeah, I've raced against James. The guy can put out some power, man.
Yeah, yeah.
If he slims down a little bit, he's going to be there.
Oh, come on, man. Like, with as much stuff as he's doing, I'm surprised he even has time to race.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And the guy is just, he's getting it done, but.
No, listen, I'm 20 pounds away too, so it's fine.
I still think I'm about 15 pounds overweight, but we'll get there. But so you're training for the cyclocross.
So this is my season. Cyclocross has been like the main focus of my season for many, many years now. Last year I kind of took like I was in a bad place mentally and I just shut it down. I shut it down in November. But this year I'm going to train. I've been training with Ken all year, lifting weights and trying to improve my...
Ken with Kilowatt Coaching.
Kilowatt Coaching and improving my FTP, my functional threshold of power. That went up 40 watts. That's a pretty good boost. And my strength is there. So this is my big season
buff,
coming.
Dude. You've been hitting the gym.
Well, you know, it's tough.
For a 70-year-old man, dude, you've got a lot of muscle mass.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. So anyway, my goal is to go to nationals and just to have a good race, man.
Okay. You know,
I don't really have any aspirations. You know, people that go to nationals, some of them are guys like me that just want to go. But other guys are real serious and they have low points, which is good. Like, you know, theoretically the best racer in the world has got 0 points. Right. And, you know, right now my points are like, I think 500. Well, these guys that are really good are in the 300s, you know. And so you race, and as you win, your points go down, which is good, you know. So I need to get out there and race and get my points down. And that way, when you start a cyclocross race, you are staged kind of like NASCAR. Like, the best person is in front, right? Like Formula One, the guy who does the best, you know, qualifying time, he's pole position. So the guy with the lowest points, he is called to the line first. And he gets to pick his slot in the front row. And there's 8 racers in each row. So if you're back more than 3 or 4 rows, you're probably not going to win, okay? It's just, and you probably are going to be behind a lot of people. And that's, you know, a lot of waiting.
Right.
Cross is weird in
30, so many ways.
In 30 seconds, you can be a minute behind. And it sounds dumb, but everyone who's done cross races will be nodding their heads.
Right.
It is that way. So I'd like to have like a shot, you know, of having a good race. So I want to get my points down and like, you know, maybe be third row. That'd be cool. So we'll see how that works out. But either way, the goal is to go there and race well. That's the thing.
And you ride with Omaha Velo.
Omaha Velo, yep.
And we had, let's see, it was Eric and...
Raffle from Harvest Racing.
They're going to be doing a cyclocross race.
Yes, our club's putting on a race in November. They're putting on a race the week after, I think, or maybe it's vice versa.
I think it's the week before.
Yeah, theirs is before and ours is after. And then there's Lincoln is going to put on a race too. So we're going to have 3 races, you know, in the Omaha Lincoln area this year, and I think the Harvest race is
Lincoln team is that's the university, right? A university club.
So there's a lot of teams down there
okay.
that are not affiliated with the university. The university, I think, does have a team, but because they're students and they're very busy with studying,
right.
they don't organize races. They
Come on,
they used to.
Busy with studying? You've been to college.
Yeah, I know. But, well, yeah, these particular actual kids are. You know,
okay.
And some of them, I think, have graduated, so... Anyway, Chris used to be on there too.
Okay.
So anyway, Dylan McNeil is a kid named Charlie who's pretty good. He's gonna he was on their team.
Right.
You know, I think he works for Kiewit or somebody like that.
Okay.
So,
intelligent kid.
These smart kids. You know, cyclists are generally like a little bit higher IQ people. I'm serious.
Well, there's a level of discipline if you want to compete.
I don't know. It just seems to attract the guy, the guy or gal that is educated, kind of just gets into cycling. I don't know why. But most of my cycling friends are very well educated and doing well professionally. So. Well,
Eric has a doctorate.
And Raffle's got a real job and 2 kids.
There you go.
Yeah.
That in and of itself is another job.
Oh yeah, 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 and his kids are young too.
Yeah, then they're like having three jobs. So you're training for these, and then
training to go to Nationals. That's in Louisville, Kentucky. Masters races on I think December 9th, which is I believe a Thursday.
And where's
it might
be
the 11th. Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay,
I might have called it Louisville because you know how we do.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So they like don't
Illinois.
Like it. Yeah. Well, you know, we have a Louisville, Nebraska. They have a Louisville, Kentucky. Somewhere in, I get mixed up with the two of them. You know.
Yeah. We have Louisville.
Louisville.
Yeah.
Nebraska.
Yeah. Where they have the gravel.
Ride. Right. Where we had our gravel race. Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky, in first week in December.
Yeah, it's not. That's good weather.
Well, you hope so. It could be rainy, though.
Yeah, it can rain. It can rain. A couple years ago, I got a daughter in Nashville, so.
I don't remember what year it was. Maybe it was 2013. It was the same year that Mark Savory won the Masters World Championship because it was there. And they had the World Championships in Louisville, Kentucky. And me and my friends all drove out there. I had a BMW station wagon at the time. Carly went with us. And we had six people in this bad boy. And the problem was who got to sit on the hump in the back seat because it was supposed to be like a two-seater in the back.
Right.
But we had six people, you know. Anyway, it was a lot. And so, yeah, we ran all the way out there and we watched the World Championships. And it was great. Sven Nys won.
What is it about cyclocross that intrigues you to do that? Because I know it's kind of your thing. You kind of...
I tell you what, you know, when I came back from the Army and came back here in like 86, I would get these magazines called Bicycle Racing Illustrated was one of them, full color magazine. And then the other one was called Winning. And it was colorful pictures, good stories. And it was like a publication that would come out probably every 2 weeks in the summer. But then like during the winter, it'd be like once a month. But anyway, I would look at these things. And in the winter, they'd have these guys doing cyclocross. And it looks like a 10-speed with knobby tires, but it also looks like a steeplechase race, you know. And back then, the courses were different than they are now. I mean, if you go back and look at some of these videos from like 50s, 60s, 70s, these guys are doing a hell of a lot of running and a hell of a lot of mud. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Compared to what they do now. And the tires, skinnier. I've got some vintage cyclocross tires. They're 28s. Oh. You know, and they have like little tiny little pimples on them, and those are the knobs. You know what I mean? So you wouldn't be able to do what you could today with the bikes. But anyway, I'd see these guys, and it was just amazing. I always wanted to do that, but you couldn't get that bike here in the States.
Okay.
And nobody made one. Nobody sold one. So I would take like a touring bike. I had a Schwinn touring bike, and I put Specialized made a tire back then called the Tri-Cross. And it was, you know, I think 700 by 35, and it had like decent knobs on it. It was like a mountain bike tire, but just made for road.
Right.
And I put those on there, and I didn't have a mountain bike at the time, but there was mountain biking. You know, it was kind of in its infancy as far as racing and stuff around here. And so I would do these mountain bike races on this touring bike that I put the bar end shifters on, like the cyclocross guys, and these Tri-Cross tires. And I would basically ride a cyclocross bike as a mountain bike.
Okay.
And, you know, it worked pretty good.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I want to talk more about the training. I want to talk more about the nutrition.
Okay.
But I think what I want to do is I think I'd like to bring Ken in for that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And then we can really kind of dive into the nitty gritty about, because we're getting into the winter months.
Yeah. Well, we're getting to the part, Ken calls the pointy end of the stick. This is it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're at the pointy end of the stick, exactly. Uh-huh. And so the question is how do we prepare and prep and stuff for the coming spring? And so I think what we should do, I think we should call it a day, and we should bring Ken
let's get
in
Ken
another
in here
time,
next time
and go get into the nitty gritty on that. And
that sounds awesome.
And it could be really information that can help you get better training. Now I've done some stuff just recently on coaching, right? So I've authored four books now. I've got copyright on one. I got waiting for three of them. But one of them, I talk a lot about building that cardiovascular system, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the data that I got was, as I was redoing my research, was cycling, you know, how they were increasing the VO2 max, but then how they were there was some research on how to cheat, on how to create. And I don't mean cheat like using enhancing drugs. No, I'm talking about like shortcuts that actually can give you massive gains. And strange as it may seem, some of them came from the American Journal of Cardiac Rehab.
Oh, really?
And, oh, yeah. It's pretty impressive. So I took some of this. I started applying it to elite-level performance athletes, a couple who are going professional. And they've all come back saying, this is the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. And I'm like, okay. So I'm going to test that theory on a 55-year-old fat guy, a.k.a. me.
Hey, and I'm 59.
I'm going to do that this winter. Okay? And I want to test the data so that, you know, kind of see what I got, right?
You know, one of the things they're learning with the road scene and the incredible performances we've seen from Tadej Pogacar and Roglic and Evenepoel and Vanderpool, they're finding out a lot of it is with the gut. Oh. If you can get more fuel in the body, and these guys are doing a lot more calories per hour than they ever have before, almost double, and in some cases basically triple from what we used to do.
Well, and there's been a lot of data.
And they trained their gut to do it because you can't just do it straight out of the box.
Not only that, but there's data on gut flora to help you be able to do that. So there's a lot of really cool science coming down the pipeline.
Do you know what boofing is?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we'll talk about boofing next time. Okay. There we go. All good right. Topics.
As opposed to buffing.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't Google boofing, kids.
Yeah. It's like my buddy one time, Five Guys Burgers and Fries came into town, and he Googled Five Guys, and the alarm went off on the security system because we were in securities, and so we got a phone call from the security desk. And saying, hey, what are you Googling up there? And he's like, I was trying to get lunch. So anyway, well, listen, everybody, thank you for tuning in, and we hope to have you come back again with me, Dave, and my co-host.
Also Dave.
There you go. Two Daves, no waiting. Until next time, everybody, keep training, keep riding, take care of that bike, and until then, be safe.
Peace.